from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, we discuss the stunning revelations yesterday from the Washington Post that President Trump provided highly classified information to the Russian foreign minister and ambassador, possibly jeopardizing a source of information on the Islamic State. President Trump defended his actions this morning, tweeting that he has an absolute right to share the information. But the move was criticized by congressional Democrats and some Republicans. And here's House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi.
And we cannot have the President of the United States being casually loose-lipped about confirming something, even if it's in the public domain, to an adversarial nation.
Next on Forum, we get the latest. Join us after the news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. President Donald Trump revealed classified intelligence about ISIS to the Russian ambassador and foreign minister in a meeting last week. That's according to the Washington Post. President Trump's remarks jeopardized a valuable intelligence source on the Islamic State, according to the story, which was confirmed by multiple news outlets. Trump's actions were criticized by congressional Democrats as well as some Republicans, and the president defended himself in a tweet this morning by saying he had an absolute right to share what he wanted. The meeting with Russian officials, which was closed to the American press, came one day after President Trump's controversial firing of FBI Director James Comey in the midst of the Bureau's investigation into Russian meddling in the 2016 U.S. presidential election. And this morning, according to the Associated Press, a senior European intelligence official said his country might stop sharing information with the United States if it confirms President Donald Trump shared classified details with Russian officials. Number of people are going to be joining us throughout the hour. First, we're going to go to Washington and welcome Josh Meyer, who will spend the hour with us to discuss the current White House crisis. He's senior investigative reporter with Politico. And Josh, welcome to the program. Good to have you back.
Thanks, Michael. Good to be back.
I guess the place to begin here is to lay some of this out for us. We're talking really at this point about a deep throat source, I guess, and about Sergei Lavrov, the foreign minister, and Sergei Kislyak, who was ambassador involved in the conversations with Michael Flynn and the cause for Jeff Sessions' recusal. And specifically, there was a discussion that apparently was about an ISIS plot that had been revealed and was deeply classified.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, I mean, events are moving very quickly here on this. It's been quite a remarkable few days, even against the backdrop of a remarkable few months. But, you know, I would characterize it more as deep state versus deep throat. I don't think there's one person who is, you know, leaking information and, you know, meeting people in garages and saying, follow the money. What's actually happening here is that, you know, the intelligence community and people affiliated with it and associated with it, former intel people on the Hill, are really kind of rising up and revolting against what they say is kind of an astonishing lack of understanding of, appreciation for, and regard for the national intelligence community and the secrets that they possess. I mean, what they say that Trump did in this case is a huge breach of national security. It could have undermined a key relationship and an investigation into ISIS, which is our most sort of existential threat right now. And perhaps most importantly, it could jeopardize our relationships with key partners overseas who we need, you know, to be our partners in the fight against terrorism.
Yeah, a number of people have remarked how we seem to have an alliance now between the intelligence services, which President Trump has excoriated, and the press, which he has also excoriated. Usually they're in more of an adversarial situation with one another. But he says he has a prerogative to declassify whatever he wants, and technically he is correct, is he not?
I think he is correct. I mean, there were a couple of senators and House members talking about that this morning on TV. And he's incorrect in some other respects, though. I mean, you can, as the president, technically declassify. As soon as something comes out of your mouth, technically you've made the decision to declassify it, whether you wanted to or not. But, you know, the protocol and the way it's supposed to work around here is that you are supposed to clear that with the right people, the people that know the classifications. I don't think Trump would know the difference between top secret compartmented information and special access information, which are two different kinds of classification. And so the concern here is that he didn't talk to the right people and say, can we even share this with other people? This was information that, according to the Post, was so classified and so closely held that it was compartmented, and a lot of people weren't allowed to know what it was, including U.S. allies, which is about the highest level of classification you can get. So to just divulge that information, yes, as the president, he may have the right to do that, but that doesn't mean it's not a really dangerous thing to do, especially with Russia, given that they're not really our ally, even on counterterrorism, as much as they say they are. We have very different agendas in Syria, in Iraq, in Iran, and around the world.
So he jeopardized not only the source of the intelligence on ISIS, but may have indeed put this ally, whomever the ally or may have been. And the Washington Post showed restraint in not naming the city that this emanated from, although apparently
right.
it was mentioned. Put that ally in jeopardy and did not share it with our allies. And Russia certainly, as you've pointed out, is not necessarily an ally by any means.
Right, right. You know, I mean, there's that now sort of famous photo of Trump sort of yucking it up with the two Sergeys, you know, Kislyak and Lavrov in the White House meeting. But, you know, the White House, that meeting was closed to the American press, to the U.S. press. Only Russian media was allowed there. And it just, you know, gives you a sense that, you know, that there's this special relationship evolving with Russia, which if it was something that was of benefit to the United States would be great. But, you know, the sense is that they're kind of steamrolling Trump, and that, you know, as Putin continues to expand and project power throughout Europe and try to influence elections in other countries, you know, we're pretending to get along with him, but we're essentially letting him do whatever he wants to do. So, you know, people don't think that that's funny. The photo of those three laughing it up in the White House is very funny.
Well, the report from the Post said that President Trump was essentially bragging, saying, look, I get this great intel to the Russians, which is particularly ironic in light of the fact that he was firing Jim Comey supposedly because he was a showboat.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's so many levels of irony here. It's hard to keep track. But, you know, he also, you know, eviscerated Hillary Clinton during the campaign for mishandling classified information. And you can't mishandle classified information, you know, in any. Well, probably there are worse scenarios than this, but this is bad. I mean, this is basically inadvertently through whatever means sharing information that you shouldn't, that everybody has agreed from the intelligence community should not have been shared with anybody without, you know, prior discussion and approval, but especially with Russia. I mean, it could get people killed. It could, you know, stop the flow of information about a key investigative angle into ISIS. And you know, the stuff about intel sharing among allies is very, very serious. So if these allies are now saying that they're going to be withholding information, you know, that's a really, really serious problem. And there's another problem, which is a huge problem here, which bears mentioning, which is that the intelligence community itself is very afraid of sharing information with the commander-in-chief because they're afraid of how he's going to misuse it. And that could, you know, in ways conscious and subconscious, really have an impact on the whole flow of information from the field, you know, case officers out in the middle of nowhere gathering information all the way up to headquarters and then deciding what to give to the White House. I mean, that's a huge problem.
It is indeed a huge problem. And we also had statements from Secretary of State Tillerson, National Security Advisor H.R. McMasters, and Deputy National Security Advisor Dina Powell yesterday, which one of the reporters, Greg Miller from The Washington Post, said were carefully worded denials. And we have a quote a cut from National Security Advisor McMaster speaking actually just moments ago defending the president. Let's hear.
The premise of that article is false, that in any way the president had a conversation that was inappropriate or that resulted in any kind of lapse in national security. And so I think the real issue, and I think what I'd like to see really debated more, is that our national security has been put at risk by those violating confidentiality.
Josh Meyer, what do you make of that?
Well, I think Greg, I know Greg well. He's a great reporter. He's putting it politely. I mean, we call it a non-denial denial here, which is basically they're denying something that was never alleged. So, you know, even today when he was being, you know, sort of piled on by the media, you know, McMaster said that the premise of that article is false. I don't know what that means, but, you know, he didn't say that the article itself is false. And yesterday, in their very carefully worded denials, you know, they were saying, you know, that he didn't disclose sources and methods, which is the crown jewels of U.S. intelligence gathering, how things are obtained and from whom they're obtained.
Yeah, he said, sources, methods, or military operations, but those weren't
right.
The things that the article addressed. They addressed information that was given out. And
right.
That is something that President Trump tweeted essentially non-denial this morning.
Right. So, I mean, you know, I talked to a very senior intelligence person yesterday, and he said that, you know, the big problem here is that, you know, even if he didn't disclose sources and methods, and, you know, there's a good chance that he probably didn't, the Russians are the best in the world in terms of intelligence agencies at connecting the dots and backtracking on this information to find out exactly where it came from, who gave it, and so forth. And, you know, it could have been somebody. There's a lot of countries out there, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Turkey, and other even organizations. I mean, somebody mentioned even it could have been Hezbollah, the political/terrorism organization that could have provided this information. But there's a lot of these groups and countries that don't want to telegraph that they're cooperating with the United States because they still have to sort of make peace and get along with Russia and other countries. So, you know, he could have blown the cover of a very key operation and a valuable ally.
And as you said earlier, the United States and Russia don't necessarily see eye to eye in Syria, to put it mildly. Josh Meyer, again, a senior investigative reporter of Politico, and this could certainly affect what's going on in Syria, particularly ironic in light of the crematoria, which turned up with literally thousands and thousands of people who apparently were killed by the Assad regime. I want to bring Congresswoman Anna Eshoo into this. She's a member of the U.S. House of Representatives, Democratic Congresswoman representing the South Bay. Congresswoman, good to have you with us. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Michael. It's good to be with you.
Well, in light of what we're discovering from the Washington Post article and from what's happened, these rather stunning revelations in the last really 24 hours, the biggest issue for House Democrats now, I imagine, is this concern about our allies and getting information and trust from those who are giving it to us?
Well, first.
I'm sorry. We'll try to get Congresswoman Eshoo back. Somehow we lost her. Let me go to Glenn Carroll, who is going to join us from Boston. He's CIA officer and associate fellow at the Harvard Kennedy School's Carr Center for Human Rights Policy. And Glenn Carroll, good to have you with us. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
I guess you've talked about this as maybe the worst damage since 1861 and raised the whole question about where the tipping point is in this. But at this point, a big question would be, will this possibly bring more pressure from your vantage point to the White House to, well, on the one hand, maybe reveal if there was indeed a recording system in existence to reveal that, or perhaps for Congress to move more toward a special prosecutor?
Well, one would hope that one or both of those steps would occur. My comment about the greatest crisis to our institutions since 1861 isn't specifically or only about the leaking or the sharing of information in the Oval Office with the Russians, but the broader issue of the competence, the views, the support, and the objectives of Trump and his entourage, and their disdain for the Bill of Rights and our separation of powers, things like that. Will this specific issue of sharing this information bring changes? Well, one would hope, but there have been so many egregious breaches of protocol, principle, law, practice for months and throughout the campaign, frankly, that have caused nothing to change from the Republican support. The deciders in this are the Republican leaders, and they've made the calculus quite consistently that the 38% of the population that supports Trump and votes for the Republican candidates is critical to their survival as politicians.
Yeah, I said, in fact,
if they do that, nothing will change.
I've said on a couple of occasions, you wonder where the Howard Bakers are among them, or for that matter, Lowell Weicker, Elliot Richardson, and so forth.
Well, the Lowell Weickers and Howard Bakers are now Democrats. The center has disappeared because of the two phenomena of the rise of technology and cable networks that cater to narrow slices, and the gerrymandering of districts so that our elected officials now are more ideologically pure and don't have to please a broader spectrum of the electorate, which exists in most places. And as a result of that, we now have this crazy phenomenon of the zealous, narrow politician who's also incompetent.
Congresswoman Ashley, do we have you on the line now? We lost you for a moment.
You do. Thank you.
Okay. I want to go back to Glenn Carroll, but let me go to you now. And let me just get a sense, actually, of what's happening among Democrats, particularly in light of these last revelations. Are you trying to move across the aisle and get some bipartisan support when the president has really sort of flagrantly, in many ways, breached concerns about national security?
Well, we're just going into this evening at for 6:30 votes, and the Congress has been out without all last week in our district. So we need Republicans to we need everyone to set aside, let me put it this way, any kind of partisanship and move to the highest level of patriotism, because this is highly damaging to our country, and it places our national security at risk. That means the security of everyone in our country. That's how high level this is. So as I said earlier, I'm a veteran of the House Intelligence Committee, served there for almost a decade, and I understand very well what a code word intelligence is. And I think you may have picked up, I don't know whether we were cut off when I said this, now the administration is saying that there were no sources or methods that were given to the foreign minister and the Russian ambassador to the United States. But that's not the point of the reporting. The Russians are excellent at being able to reverse engineer what was given to them, this code word intelligence. And that has a more than a chilling effect on our intelligence partners around the world, because this was not intelligence, Michael, that was ours. It was not ours to give away. It was another country's information that was shared with us and given to the least trustworthy prime adversary of the United States, Russia. Now, this damages those that are and places their life at risk, our human intelligence people that are out on the field. It hurts the recruiting of them for our agency moving forward. It's really reckless and unprecedented, and it's chilling. So my hope is, and Republicans care as we do about national security. That's really sacred ground. I certainly hope that that more will step forward. There are some that have expressed their dismay about what has been reported, and I can only hope that moving forward that there will be more. We need an independent, bipartisan investigative commission. And that's on one side to broaden it out and to get the facts. And what this fascination that the president seems to have with the Russians is just beyond me. But the facts need to be ascertained. And then on the criminal side, there really should be a special counsel, special prosecutor.
Congresswoman, I thank you so much for joining us. That's Congresswoman Anna Eshoo, who, again, is with the U.S. House of Representatives and represents the 18th Congressional District here in Northern California in the South Bay. And let me go back to Glenn Carroll. And Glenn Carroll, this is a president who, as many have pointed out, seems to know no boundaries. There is concern. In fact, David Brooks had an article. He said he may be best described as an infantilist. That's the first time I've heard that word. And there are Republicans who have crossed over in their dissent and their concern. Bob Corker comes immediately to mind. And even Paul Ryan, because he's been behind the president, asked for an explanation and all this. Corker said the White House is in a downward spiral. But let me go back to the whole sense of intelligence here, Glenn Carroll, and how you see that. The Wall Street Journal had a story back in February that said sensitive intelligence was being withheld. This is allegedly from Donald Trump out of concern that it would be compromised or it would be in some way leaked. And that was back in February.
Well, I don't have any doubt that that is occurring. I mean, in the broad sense, in the intelligence community, in every decision it takes to provide information to our policymakers has to weigh the likelihood of how the information will be used and what to do about it. Because policymakers are policymakers. They are not professional intelligence officers. They have other objectives, and we serve them, but we must take into consideration how to protect the sources and methods and the capabilities while providing information. Every report a field officer writes, I spent 25 years doing this, every report I sat down to write, I had to make conscious decisions. How do I couch this so that I can protect the capability to collect it and protect the lives of the individuals involved? That's part of the job. In this specific instance, the February report you allude to, is I'm certain is true, because it is so clear that the information could be misunderstood, misused, and lies, treasury, capabilities put in jeopardy, that I don't doubt for a second that the community as a whole is carefully trying to decide in every instance, how can we provide information without compromising?
Did you not say at one point that no part of that whole intelligence community would have granted Donald Trump security clearance?
Oh, yeah, I've said I think I've been on record in public probably for over a year saying that it is not conceivable that any intelligence agency, and there are 17 of them, or the military would grant any sort of security clearance to Donald Trump. It simply would not happen. He doesn't remotely meet the standards of judgment, personality, knowledge, stability required. It's just clear. That's not a polemical partisan statement. It's an objective observation. He wouldn't get a security clearance. I could tick off 20 minutes worth of reasons why.
Well, we're coming up on a break here. Let me go back to Josh Meyer. Josh, what can be done in the face of all this? I mean, even if, as Congresswoman Eshoo says, you can appeal to the highest level of patriotism across the aisle and try to get Republicans on board, this is not an impeachable offense. This is not something that goes against the executive's prerogatives in terms of declassifying. What kind of action can be taken?
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, first of all, what Glenn said about the security clearance, I think that Trump's connections with a bunch of, you know, questionable people of questionable repute and character would also make it very hard for him to get a security clearance. But, you know, one thing that Congressman Eshoo said, which is very important in all of this, is that this was not Trump's information to give. It was information shared with the United States on a very specific basis. So when he doubles down on this, in a sense, and says, you know, in his you know, tweets that, you know, I'm the president of the United States, I'm allowed to give away whatever information I want or declassify it, you know, that has to have a tremendously chilling effect on all of our allies. I mean, I can just imagine that the European Union, you know, and other people are just extremely upset about this and concerned that if they give him anything, that this will happen again. I mean, you know, what happened, you know, initially was bad, but for him to double down and basically insist that he was within his rights to do that suggests like a fundamental and dangerous misunderstanding.
That's been, according to every Trump expert, the pattern of his behavior since being a businessman, and now it's translating into politics without any apologies. Let me invite those of you listening to join us. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. If you have thoughts about this, questions or comments, feel free to join the program, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, or tweet us, Twitter handles @KQEDForum. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. President Donald Trump revealed classified intelligence about ISIS to the Russian ambassador and foreign minister in a meeting last week. That's according to the Washington Post, and we're discussing the latest fallout from that meeting. We spoke earlier with Congresswoman Anna Eshoo, and we have Josh Meyer with us from Politico, and Glenn Carroll from the Harvard Kennedy School's Carr Center for Human Rights Policy, a former CIA officer. And we're going to go to your calls. Let me, in fact, remind you that you can join the program a number of ways by calling our toll-free number. It's available to you. It's 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And here's Lori as our first caller. Good morning.
Good morning. I was wondering why this is not considered an impeachable offense, since one of the reasons for being able to impeach a president, my understanding is they're showing incompetence, and he's the most incompetent person I've ever seen. Your comments, please.
Yeah, well, Josh Meyer, we go back to the whole question of impeachment. First of all, it's very unlikely with a Republican Congress to begin with. That, I think, is a given. But are there articles here that could be brought forward in terms of some have made the argument? Richard Painter made it here on the air, in fact, just a couple of days ago.
Well, I mean, Michael, you made a good point, which is, you know, an impeachable offense is essentially whatever Congress decides it should be. And so when you have a Republican-controlled House and Senate, you know, I don't think that we'll ever get to that. I mean, technically speaking, it is still hard to say that just pure incompetence is an impeachable offense. I mean, I think you need to have more than that. Obstruction of justice is an impeachable offense. Sometimes the cover-up of these things is more important in terms of some of the other things we're talking about. But, you know, I think in this case, he probably has some wiggle room in saying that he had some specific reason to do that for the greater good of counterterrorism cooperation. So, I mean, I think that with so many allegations out there about the president, you know, I don't know if you would want to focus on this as an impeachable offense. But one thing that's I think is really, really important to mention here is this is not an isolated incident. I mean, when, you know, over the past few months, Trump has almost systematically, alienated some of our most key allies. I mean, if you remember, he hung up the phone after berating the Prime Minister Turnbull of Australia. He accused Britain's GCHQ, which is essentially their NSA, of helping Obama spy on him and wiretap his campaign and his phones, which was flatly wrong. And so when you start doing that to some of our key allies, it has a cost. And so, you know, I think that even before this happened, people were very, very skittish about, you know, doing stuff with President Trump that they have traditionally done with the United States. And that's a really bad thing.
Well, Josh, what do you think about H.R. McMaster saying that President Trump was not briefed on the source of the information?
Well, again, I think that they're, you know, sort of trying to sort of skate around this and not address the fundamental issue. So, you know, we've, you know, everybody is trying to figure out exactly what was said and where it came from and so forth. But it doesn't matter, you know, whether he was briefed on one specific or another. The feeling was, and it was a strong enough feeling that they called the CIA and the NSA and people out of concern about it, is that he disclosed information that he shouldn't have. So whether he disclosed the country or the source or whatever he did disclose was considered to be way beyond the pale and something that they shouldn't have. So they might be, you know, trying to sort of, you know, wave this away. But, you know, I think that there's some people on the Hill that would like to hear some contrition here and perhaps maybe say, you know, we'll learn from this and we'll do better in the future. But that doesn't seem to be the case.
It doesn't seem to be, indeed. And let me get Douglas on as our next caller. Douglas, good morning.
Great. We've been hearing from my short research for about 6-7 weeks about terrorism and potentially using a laptop or computer on an airplane. Wouldn't we want the Russians to know this since they've, you know, suffered terrorist bombings in Egypt and Turkey and I think another country? Why wouldn't this information be shared and possibly use Russia as partners?
Glenn Carl,
I mean, adversarial relationship that we've created with Russia, it used to be because of communism. They're no longer communists. I mean, it's why are we doing this against Russia?
Yeah, Douglas, I get the essence of your question. I want to go to Glenn Carl and get a response to it. I think it's a good question.
Well, when we can, we do work with Russians and have for many years on counterterrorism issues. The Trump's claim that he's going to ramp up the cooperation at a policy level could occur. Whether it should is another issue. But there has been counterterrorism operation. But that's not the same thing as sharing a sensitive operation about an impending operation that can, in such a way that can reveal our sources and compromise our relations with a closer ally. And in this specific context, as I believe it was the Congresswoman pointed out, Russia is not our friend at all and is working at pretty much 180-degree cross purposes.
You mean in Syria, working with Hezbollah, for example, in Iran, right, and so forth, yeah.
Well, and supporting Assad. Yeah. And all of their claims that they are acting against ISIS really are a lot of talk. They've done very little against ISIS. What they have done is bolster the Assad regime. So, yes, theoretically working with Russia on a counterterrorist operation of mutually shared assessment is the thing that one should pursue, and the intelligence community does, but in this specific instance, it the devil's in the details, and the details are pretty devilish on this one.
Yeah, well, Glenn, let me go to another kind of practical question from you, an answer I hope can come. And what's the proper way to share intelligence? You call a meeting with all the agencies, or does it have to be mutually exclusive for both countries?
Yeah, well, I'd like to push back, or at least make a point on this what is clearly the Trump White House line of defense, which is that the president can do whatever the heck he wants and declassify information. And in a very narrow legal sense, I guess one can say that is correct. But in the broader sense, it is not correct. Now, the captain of the ship does not have a right to sail it into rocks because he decides that's the right thing to do. You are constrained as a leader by many obligations and responsibilities. And President Bush is a good model of how to do this right. He, 8 years ago or so now, 10 years ago, wanted to share information. He thought it would be helpful from a pursuit of policy objective to give a certain bit of classified information to a foreign power. But what he did was to say, I want to do the following. And he said that to the intelligence community, and then he worked out how to do so in a way that did not jeopardize American equities and interests. Because he realized that the dozens of thousands of people in the intelligence community are professionals, and that there are things that they work on 10 hours or 14 hours a day that he couldn't possibly be cognizant of. And then it was worked out how to do it, and he did it. That's an appropriate way for the president to decide, it is in our national interest that I share this bit of information. That's not what happened in the White House last week.
Again, Glenn Carroll is former CIA officer and associate fellow with the Harvard Kennedy School's Carr Center for Human Rights Policy. Let me bring David French into this discussion. He's a senior fellow with the Conservative National Review Institute, a writer for the National Review. And David French, welcome back to Forum. Good to have you.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Appreciate your being with us. And my first question to you is a question that's on many people's minds. Where are the conservatives? Particularly the conservatives who have been, shall we say, concerned about Russia and Ukraine and Russia in Crimea and Russia generally.
Well, I think the short answer to that is all over the map right now. If you try to decipher that, so there's this initial report that's incredibly shocking that essentially says that the president of the United States impulsively and potentially in a fit of ego, shares extraordinarily classified information with a geopolitical rival and adversary, information that could not only jeopardize lives, but also jeopardize relationship with an ally. That's an extraordinarily serious allegation, followed immediately by H.R. McMaster, probably the most, if not the most, one of the two most respected members of the administration, along with General Mattis, who says the story is reported is false. Then today he comes out and he essentially says, well, reading between the lines, that there was a disclosure, but it was appropriate. He doesn't believe there's any damage in relationships with allies. And so the bottom line is you've got an awful lot of people wondering what really happened here. If the initial allegation is the correct allegation, that this was impulsive and damaging, that's very, very serious. If there's a middle ground, it was impulsive but ultimately harmless, it's still serious that he was impulsive, and we're just lucky that it wasn't worse. And then, it does seem like the least likely outcome here is what was just described, that this was a deliberately planned, calculated disclosure to advance American national interests. That seems to be not really even the defense that's coming out of the White House right now. So I think a lot of people are trying to figure out, how troubled should I be right now? And that's why we got to know more about exactly what happened, exactly what transpired, because one thing we do know is that denials from the White House, a denial is not the same thing as a refutation. That's why, once again, as with so many other things with Trump, it's important that we're able to see as much as possible, consistent with national security, the evidence for ourselves.
Well, I'm also, in terms of gathering evidence, looking at some tweets here and listener comments, raising a question about why the Russian media was invited but not the U.S. media and what the reasoning was behind that. And perhaps if Trump not only released the highest security level information to an antagonistic foreign power, but also possibly to the press of that power.
Yeah, that's one of the many questions raised by all of this. Was a cameraman in the room when this occurred? Who all was in the room when this occurred? What was disclosed? Why was it disclosed? Was there any process that happened before this disclosure to run the traps on it to make sure and to get buy-in from the intelligence agencies that this would not compromise American national security? Or if it didn't, was that just purely accidental that it didn't, that he made an impulsive decision that thankfully won't hurt us, but could have? I mean, these are the questions that we need to these are the questions that have to be asked, and these are the answers we need.
Do you think we can get some people from the conservative side? I mean, I mentioned earlier, for example, that there have been John McCain has been speaking out, so has Bob Corker. I'm talking about people in the legislature, obviously, who can indeed take a stand here.
Oh, there's an awful lot of conservatives who are taking a stand. The question, I think, are what about conservative politicians? I mean, I think there's a lot of conservatives in the media who are very deeply troubled, have expressed that loudly and vociferously. The question is, what about the political leaders in Washington? And here's something where, you know, the one entity so far in all of the, you know, the Trump-Russia controversies that so far seems to be performing its job professionally and competently seems to be the Senate Intelligence Committee.
Which President Trump has made essentially an adversary and has expressed great enmity against.
Correct. And so there is one entity, at least so far. I mean, he's canned the head of the FBI. We don't know who's going to replace him. The head of the House Intel Committee has recused himself after sallying forth to defend Trump in an improper way. But Senate intelligence still seems to be soldiering on, doing things professionally and competently. This is the kind of thing that if we had a select committee, if we had an independent committee examining the issues between Donald Trump and Russia, this is the kind of thing that could fall within that gambit. Because once again, we've got this controversy that involves Russia.
So you're in favor of an independent investigation. Are you also in favor of a special prosecutor?
I would be in favor of a special prosecutor if there were probable cause crimes have been committed. In this circumstance, we're not at that point yet. So that's why I think we need an independent investigation. In this circumstance, yes, and I've been calling for an independent investigation since the inception of since we really began to understand the dimensions of this controversy. I think it's really the only thing that's going to give the American people the confidence that the political branches of government have fully examined all of the dimensions of this, of the relationship with Trump and Russia. And that's critically important. Yeah, look, there's going to be diehard Trump partisans where he can do no wrong for them. Those people are out there by the millions. But what we're talking about is the desperate need politically and for national security and for the integrity of our democracy of an investigation that the vast majority of Americans can rely on and depend upon no matter what its conclusions are.
David French, appreciate very much your being with us, and I thank you.
Well, thank you.
David French, again, a senior fellow with the Conservative National Review Institute and a writer for the National Review. And let me bring more of our callers in. Milton joins us next. Milton, you're on the air.
Yes. Was the news media president at the meeting where Donald Trump made the serious breach of national security? And if so, did they reveal some of this information? And secondly, is this breach grounds for impeachment?
Well, we've already talked about the grounds of impeachment, but what was the breach, Josh Meyer? Can we go to the specifics on that with you?
You mean the breach that Trump is accused or alleged to have committed?
Right.
The breach is that, David, who was just on made a very good point, which is that, you know, in order to really get the full picture of what happened here, you know, an independent commission would be the way to go. I mean, if you have an independent prosecutor, they're just going to look at whether any criminal charges are warranted, and that really wouldn't give you a full picture of all of the things that happened in terms of, you know, the Russians, you know, projecting influence into our election, meddling in the election, and so forth, and, you know, what Trump associates did or did not do. And you wouldn't really, you know, so you really need sort of a broad investigation with subpoena power, but by a commission, not just looking at criminal violations, if there were any, but other things, too. So, but in the sense of this incident here, again, there's the political part and that there's the security part. Trump basically was accused of sharing information, very, very closely held information with the Russians. That was information that was not really the U.S. government's to share. It was something shared with us by another source, and that by sharing it, he was jeopardizing that ongoing relationship, possibly jeopardizing the investigation itself and the source of the information. And again, you know, this is, you know, about one of the most serious threats to the United States since 9/11. We're talking about the ability of terrorists to weaponize laptops. That's what this is all about. And the Homeland Security Department has been sort of scrambling for months now to try to figure out what to do about that, whether to ban laptops in all cabins on U.S.-bound flights from Europe, for instance. So this is a very, very, you know, intensive investigation trying to figure out what ISIS is capable of doing in terms of the technology that they're developing, how it could affect Americans. And so the question is, what did the president share with the Russians about it? How are they going to be able to backtrace that and figure out what, you know, where it came from and what's the fallout going to be?
Well, naturally, in light of these recent revelations, there are many who have certainly brought to our attention Donald Trump's statements during the campaign about Hillary Clinton, the Secretary of State, and with her email server and so forth, jeopardizing national security. And I want to read one comment and then read another and go to you on this, Glenn Carl. Andrew writes, Trump's entire campaign was about how careless Hillary Clinton was and that she should be in jail now. We find he's doing far worse than what he claimed of his opponent. I'm saddened that Americans cannot come together as patriots to save what we have as a nation and how our nation is perceived on the world stage. On the other hand, another listener writes, mishandling classified information verbally, directly with the Russians in the Oval Office bears no resemblance to the thousands of documents which were improperly filed by Hillary Clinton in an easily hackable format through which all foreign agencies could have penetrated American security. Go to you on this, Glenn Carl.
Well, gosh, Hillary made a big mistake. I never placed the supposed email scandal at the level of seriousness that it was given by Hillary's opponents. The sharing of information is a single one-off in the Oval Office that we're talking about here. There's a single one-off issue which raises possible consequences and shows is in line with a pattern of behavior and lack of judgment. So it's inaccurate, I think, to say, well, gee, it's a one-off thing where Hillary had dozens of thousands. I think it is more accurate to say that this is an egregious breach in line with a pattern of behavior and the character and level of understanding or lack of understanding of the man in question. So I think that the equivalence, I suppose, is far or greater in the consequence of the Oval Office Act, far greater than the way the question was framed. I'd like to say one other thing that we touched upon, but there are so many issues here of that cause alarm. But to let TASS reporters, TASS is the Russian news agency, which is an official news agency, and is really a tool of the Russian intelligence service and staffed by many Russian intelligence officers, to let them into any secure space, particularly the Oval Office, even if there are Americans present, poses a tremendous threat, because I can tell you intelligence officers can do all sorts of things while being watched and still not be detected. There are all sorts of technical steps, measures that one can take, and it's something that really shouldn't happen.
Coming up on a break here in just a moment, Josh Meyer, let me just get a sense of from you again about where this is going to likely go at this point, or what likely is to unfurl.
Yeah, very good question. I mean, just to briefly touch base on what Glenn said, I mean, to let these guys from TASS, you know, the Russian quote-unquote journalists, into the Oval Office, I just know some intelligence people that are just flatly incredulous at that and completely freaked out because, I mean, you know, they have one of the best intel services in the world, you know, along with the United States. What if they've detected, what if they've devised some kind of tiny bugging device that's undetectable by a sweep? I mean, they could have dropped something in the Oval Office that could be, you know, gathering intelligence right now, but also just to let them in there for a meeting like this is sort of like a real head scratcher too. But in terms of the big picture, you know, I think that you have to take a step back, open the aperture a little bit, and look at this whole thing. And the big concern to intelligence, you know, people that I've talked to, isn't even just the specific disclosure of this. It's the perception that the White House and the U.S. government itself is just completely engulfed in chaos, that they're unable to deal with, like, even a tiny crisis of their own making like this, no less a real global crisis. So what's going to happen if there's, you know, an actual real crisis? What if, you know, what if the North Koreans, you know, send a nuke our way or you know, fighting breaks out or something like that?
Because you know, you have to rely on what comes out or emanates from the White House. You have to at least have some credibility, especially in a crisis of that sort. And indeed, we may be in some deep water here. I just have to remind listeners that you are listening to Forum, and we're talking to Josh Meyer and Glenn Carroll, and this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support this radio station, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. Let me go to another caller, and let's bring on Rhett from McVeightown. Rhett, you're on the air. Morning.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Mike, for taking my call. I am just wondering about the rationale for the Congress, the Republican Congress, not to impeach Donald Trump. I mean, it was obvious during the primary that there wasn't a lot of favor for him. There were many other candidates that establishment would have liked to have more. Why wouldn't they impeach Donald Trump after he shows so much incompetence, so many blunders along the way? And then shoo their guy in to the Oval Office. I don't understand it.
No, short answer, Josh Meyer, is he's their guy, right? I mean, and he's got his constituency.
Well, yeah, there's got to be a tipping point, though, I think. I mean, I do know people on the Hill. I mean, you heard Senator Burr last week saying, you know, that he's very troubled by some of the disclosures even before this happened, just with the firing of Jim Comey. You know, the FBI director just says his investigation is heating up into all of this. So, you know, at some point, you know, is there going to be a straw that breaks the camel's back? Impeachment is one issue. One thing that I'm hearing, you know, heating up at least in the margins of all this is what I believe it's called, you know, Amendment 25, which is, you know, that Trump's own government, the cabinet, can remove him if he is deemed to be incapable of performing his duties. So, you know, that
unfit for office, essentially. Yeah.
Or of performing his duties. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, it's not unfit for office because that's sort of a judgment call. This is almost more of a medical call, I think, in terms of like whether you're able to competently and responsibly perform the duties of office. So, you know, I am not taking a position on that one way or another, of course, but there are people out. It is a conversation that has intensified in recent weeks.
Could you take a position just for the moment, since the caller brought it up, about what the role is of Vice President Pence in all of this, particularly since he was the one who, in many ways, was a catalyst for the firing of Mike Flynn?
An unwitting catalyst, I believe,
yeah.
Is probably the best answer. I mean, and again, I mean, none of this stuff, a good plug here for the media, including your show, which is great. I mean, you know, a lot of this stuff, if not most or all of it, wouldn't have come to light if it wasn't for journalists, you know, and people within the government that are, you know, either leaking or sharing this information with people. I mean, the whole thing about Mike Flynn talking to the Russians and then lying to his own, you know, vice president about it, that wouldn't have come up. A lot of this stuff would have not come up. And, you know, I think Pence is probably ducking for cover right now. I mean, you hear a lot of these conspiracy theories that, you know, the Republicans in Congress will wait till the right time and then, you know, throw Trump overboard and put Pence in as president. I have no idea whether there's anything to that or not. But, you know, these narratives are starting to sort of take on a life of their own. So, you know, it's still very early in this administration. We have a long way to go.
And I was struck by the fact, I have to say, that President Trump did not come out and call this fake news.
Right.
Let me bring another caller on here. Mike, you're on. Morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm just wondering, you know, I hear so much of the explanation around this kind of couched in ignorance and learning curves and, you know, somewhat benign motives. I haven't heard anybody mention, but I'm wondering if is anybody talking about this as potentially treasonous behavior in aggregate? And if they are, what is that line of inquiry?
Well, Mike, you're not the only one to raise the question. When do we, Glenn Carroll, begin to define something in terms of treason, in your judgment?
Yeah, well, I've been for a year saying that cumulatively the behavior amounts to what I think is treasonous behavior. I've been in public about this since well before he received the nomination. So it is a cumulative series of acts, I would say, which gets to the competence and attitudes. And one can have different political views, but one can't serve a foreign power, either by unconsciously being manipulated or consciously doing so. I don't take a proven position on which of those is probably the case, but one of them certainly appears to. And simply the fact that we can document from open sources that Russian oligarchs who are only authorized to shift large amounts of money in the hundreds of millions of dollars with the direct okay of Vladimir Putin and the Russian intelligence service, many of whom are Russian intelligence associates themselves, have invested in numerous ways over at least a decade, hundreds of millions of dollars in Trump enterprises.
We're going to have to leave it there, Glenn Carroll. I'm sorry, we've come to the end of the program, but I thank you. Thanks, Glenn Carroll. Thanks, Josh Meyer. And thank you, our listeners. Would not be here without you, and I appreciate your listenership. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.